Are you ready for rapid fire?
I am. I hope, did you and Vince get into the offensive stuff yesterday?
What do you mean the offensive stuff?
Your composite rankings for the offense?
Yeah, we did offense and defense.
Oh, yesterday. For some reason I thought you guys were saving defense for me, but that's okay.
No, we did both yesterday. We split it up. So we did, first we did the defense together, then we did the offense.
Oh, together. Okay. I see now. Yes. I think when I read it, when you said you were splitting it, it was you were going to split like offense to one.
That would be Vince like and one defense. Day.
Yeah. But that's just, you know, I can't really read. So that's, again, my fault.
That's okay. Well, let me ask you this. We did have someone post a comment on the YouTube channel yesterday. They were surprised that we ranked the quarterback group ahead of the running back group. Now, again, the way we did this, all three of us ranked our, you know, ranked all of the position groups 1 through 10. And then I combined those rankings to make a composite, you know, so it's not like one of us did that, you know, so like I said, quarterbacks are, but we all, you know, had a hand in this. Did it surprise you at all that the quarterback group would be ranked ahead of the running back group? I think we all had the quarterbacks ahead of the running backs, if I remember right.
Yeah. So the thing that it's funny, I remember this exact kind of rationale going on in my head when I did the ranking. And to me, what it came down to is Jeremiah Love has never been a premier back in an offense, a starting running
never
back
been the lead guy
in an offense. And at least Riley Leonard has, you know, ran the helm. It's just a matter of the health, obviously. And that's like, you know, when it comes down to it for everything around Riley Leonard, but he's running offense for two seasons. Jeremiah Love has never started as a running back in an offense with, you know, like Audric Estime kind of expectations or workload. So that's kind of why I had him there. I still think the running back room is talented. It's just, there's just no actual game experience in that room right now.
Exactly. And that's, I think we kind of brought that up a little bit yesterday. Like, obviously, Price got some reps. Love got some reps last year, but Estime was the lead back last year. Both Price and Love are going to be asked to do something that they haven't done before. And at least they're either going to have to be the co-lead back together, somewhat similar to Estime and Diggs a couple of years ago, or one of them is going to end up being the lead guy. And as talented as both of them are, they lack that true experience that Riley Leonard has. And when you add in the depth of the quarterback room as well, that's another reason, you know, it's not just Riley Leonard. He's a big part of it, but we feel really confident. It's the best quarterback room that they've had 1 through 4, maybe ever. So yeah, that's got to factor into it as well. So I think we're kind of all in alignment on that. All right. Let's shift gears a little bit. Yesterday, we heard some comments from Riley Leonard from his interview with former Notre Dame cornerback Sean Crawford on his Varsity House podcast. And Fighting Irish wide receiver Jordan Faison was on with him in that same podcast. And Faison talked about his learning process as a freshman and walk-on lacrosse player who was playing wide receiver during fall training camp last year.
My high school, we weren't really known for football, so my IQ wasn't really up there. And I played quarterback and safety in high school, so I really had no wide receiver knowledge.
You were just balling. You were just balling.
So I'd say it was kind of like I started from the bottom, whereas the guys coming into my grade were kind of like I already had that kind of knowledge from high school. And so I had a lot of catching up to do. And so that's where when I started running routes, like I look at the playbook and I just see lines on the playbook. I'm like, I go out there and just follow the line and run it and just be completely wrong because I'm not reading anybody. I'm just doing my own thing. And I got reamed a couple of times for it. But I'd say throughout that process, my guys in my grade, along with like Sam and the older guys on the whole offense, they helped me progress and kind of learn that. So I kind of caught up with everybody. And then as a unit, we all went up together. And that was huge. I mean, Sam's leadership was great. You know, Riley's leadership's going to be great. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, without the older guys too, I would not be where I am today. Like, their leadership and stuff was such a help, and being able to ask these guys questions as you're coming back from a play, or if they wanted to give me a critique because I'm coming back to the huddle on something that they didn't like. Like, just those quick fixes just allowed the team to progress as a whole.
All right, Jess, so you heard what he said there. What does that say about Faison?
I think what that ultimately says about Faison is just an athlete. He has overall athleticism. And it's he's, you know, coming out of high school. And I remember back in the day, I never really believed this, the whole, like, you're getting recruited as an athlete. You know what I mean? Because it's like, how can you be recruited for, you know, a position you've literally kind of never played before? But, like, in the terms of Faison, like, that's truly what it is. He has enough athleticism where he said, you know, I could play quarterback, I could play, you know, wide receiver, I could play running back. Basically, just give me the ball, tell me to run fast, and I'll make something happen, right? And so he's a guy that becomes the most dangerous because once you start to teach them and refine them on top of, you know, the athleticism and then just the overall, I guess, experience and ability of just, you know, really just like getting by people, you know, and you actually combine that with some precision. And those are the guys who become the most scary because they're just, there's nothing you can do to teach that sort of athleticism. Guys can just literally pick up. There's just people out there who can pick up and do whatever and they don't lose a step. You know, that's how athletic they are. And I think that's kind of how Faison is.
And it's crazy to me to hear him describe it that way. Like during training camp, this guy who played quarterback and defensive back at high school is walking on as a wide receiver at Notre Dame. And there were some pretty good receivers out there on the field, you know, like Jaden Greathouse, Rico Flores, Braylon James were the freshmen that we thought, you know, we were supposed to be watching. But every time you got to see Jordan Faison and what he was doing, it's like, man, who is this guy? He's turning some heads. He didn't look like a guy who was just following some lines on a sheet of paper when he was out there in camp. And then obviously you look at what that turned into during the season. It's just nuts. And we kind of talked about this a little bit with Riley Leonard yesterday, because Riley Leonard said in the same interview, his plan coming when he got to his senior season of high school, even, was he thought he was going to play basketball in college. Then all of a sudden his coach had a connection with David Cutcliffe at Duke. And that's kind of how everything, you know, his inroad to football began was because of that. And so there's still a ton of upside for Riley Leonard. And like when you hear Jordan Faison talk about that, and again, he didn't look like a guy who was figuring out how to be a wide receiver during training camp last year. And by the time we got to see him from the middle of the season on, exclamation point, Sun Bowl MVP with what he did against Oregon State by the end of the season. Like, just think about the untapped potential that's still there for a guy like Faison. That's what pops off to me.
Yeah, I think that the ceiling is definitely still very high for a guy who, you know, again, never really played wide receiver. He's just looking at lines on a paper. He's like, all right, well, I'm just going to, you know, I know I'm fast enough, athletic enough to get by you. Now it's, you know, reading defensive backs, understanding why they're running certain routes or what the coverage gives you. And so it's like, his ability to learn on the fly, his athleticism, and now if you get a better understanding of, you know, the football dynamics, then it's game over. I think you've built like the complete wide receiver at that point. And he reminds me, if he can get stronger, it reminds me of someone like Golden Tate.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good comparison. Like when you look at just the, you know, the kind of athlete, you know, obviously Golden was a little bit bigger, not a ton bigger. Golden wasn't a big guy, but he was
strong.
He was like Tigger. Yeah. He was strong and boingy, springy, and you know, the speed and the whole thing, just a ton of talent. And obviously Jordan Faison has that as well.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Faison also talked about facing Notre Dame cornerbacks in
practice. I mean, the first five games of the season, I was running a scout team. So I'm playing against BMO, Cam, all those guys, and it developed my game so much. And then those guys also, like, they take care of you. Like, they see what you're doing, and, like, they'll tell you, like, oh, if this will work here. This will work. Even though I'm giving them a look, they're still telling me, trying to develop my game. And then when Cam was here, like, after practice, I'd go one-on-one with him and just working on my releases and stuff. And just that stuff develops you so much. And those older guys having that care for you and kind of showing that support is just huge.
Yeah, speaking of that, like, the one-on-ones, like, our DBs just beg us all the time to go one-on-ones. Like, we'll finish a throwing session, and they're just sitting there in the corner. Like, we threw on Saturday. J-Mix sitting there in the corner howling at us like a werewolf or something, just begging us to go one-on-one. So, like, they're a super competitive group and, like, always ready to work.
And that, of course, was Riley Leonard kind of jumping in there at the end. I thought that was kind of funny. They're howling at him because they want to get more work in. When you were facing your offensive counterparts, when you were playing linebacker in practice, like, did you get a lot of help or pointers from them? What was that like?
No, not necessarily as much. And I think what you have to, like, realize is there's kind of two parts to this. Like, I think when, you know, the scout team is going against, you know, the number one defense or vice versa, scout team versus the number one offense, it's a little bit different because those are guys who are a little bit, you know, younger. And those are the guys where it's like, it's not as, like, I'm not going to say it's not as serious, but, like, there's more flexibility of that stuff of being like, okay, like, this is what, you know, this is a learning moment here, especially if, like, you're trying to make, like, they're trying to give you a specific look. And if that wide receiver isn't running it right or, you know, doing exactly kind of the correct technique, then, yeah, of course, you're going to, you know, help them and that sort of stuff. And then
sure,
after practice, yeah, like, one-on-ones, maybe working, like, you see defensive ends and defensive, you know, and tackles working on stuff. And then a lot of I mean, you see this the most really out of corners and wide receivers, if we're being honest, because it's just so easy to line up and just, you know, like, run routes on air, essentially. There's no contact. You know, like, linebackers, defensive linemen, like, you're still rushing, you know, someone. So it's, like, involves still, like, the physicality of it at the end of the day. But I guess what I'm getting to is in practice when it's, like, one-on-ones, you know, like, good versus good, it's just so competitive that you're not doing anything really to, like, help the other side.
You're not helping the other guy. That's what I was thinking.
Because it's like you're still getting judged off of, you know, right, whether or not you're doing your job.
You still need to win the rep. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And so, again, right, I think when it's, you know, good on good, it's a different story. But when it's scout versus, you know, again, there's just more of that, like, kind of, like, teaching moment type
sure
stuff.
No.
It makes more sense.
Yeah. Yep. For sure. I found that
never really got the tackles to help or the linemen, because they already had a hard enough time, I feel like, blocking us, you know, like, they don't need anything extra to let us get by them, essentially.
Yeah.
But I mean, those were the least fun, like, in terms of a linebacker, when you're reading something, the least fun is when nothing goes on and you just got to crash the tackle gap, and all you're doing is throwing your body into, like, a 6'6" offensive lineman that
just waiting to get hit.
Yeah, I mean, you're literally just, like, sitting down and giving your shoulder, you know, into the offensive tackle. So, like, that was never fun.
Yeah, I'm sure. So, Faison, of course, took off as a wide receiver last year with the football team after he got on the field, and again, he wins the offensive MVP at the Sun Bowl. Interesting question from Sean Crawford on, okay, so now the football season is over. He's going to join the lacrosse team for the first time. And he asked him if the lacrosse players kind of, you know, challenged him, maybe extra physical with him, whatever, you know, in his terms, kind of gave him the Caitlin Clark type treatment, you know, like how she, you know, was kind of roughed around as she entered the WNBA this season.
Yeah, I wouldn't say at all. I mean, the lacrosse guys, that community in general was just so accepting and so supportive of just everything. I didn't even know some of the guys on the team before I even got there when I was here playing football. And they were watching the game, celebrating. I'm seeing, getting texts from some of the guys I didn't even know at the time, like congratulating me on the touchdowns and stuff. And it just goes to show how like the family and the brotherhood that you have here. And even when I got to the lacrosse field, I had a little break after the our bowl game in El Paso. And I get there, and I haven't picked up a stick in a couple months, and I'm throwing the ball terrible. Like, I can't even see the ball. Like, it's like a whole new sport for me at that time. And these guys could have easily been like, oh, like, he came. He's supposed to be lacrosse playing football. Like, why would we even want to play with this kid? Like, he's trash. Like, but no, none of the kids were like that. They were like, we understand, like, you've been playing football, and we're going to help you any way we can. And from that point on, I was just extra work with them, chilling out with them, just everything as a whole. And the culture over there, too, is just insane. I mean, the smallest details they'll harp on, no matter who you are or where you come from, and that kind of thing, kind of builds a team, and it kind of shows you like what kind of standard you got to be held to and kind of the expectations they have for you. And if you're not meeting those, I mean, you're going to hear from somebody. But those guys just being so supportive throughout the entire process, like coaches and staff alone, like that's a big help. But having my teammates actually support me is a whole other world, and that's just been huge for my whole time here so far at Notre Dame.
I think it would have been easy for some of those guys to, you know, kind of, you know, like I said, you know, kind of give him, you know, whatever, whether it's, you know, not hazing, but sort of that initiation process or whatever. It's like, oh, you think you're a big shot because you're playing football, but now you're with us. What do you think? What did you think when you heard that?
Yeah, so a couple things. First is the Lax Bros are the Lax Bros for a reason. Pretty chill guys. Pretty chill guys overall. So
that surprises me though, because lacrosse guys actually have kind of a reputation of being a little bit more wilder, I thought.
They are, but they're like they're a community of their own. Like they take care of each other. Like when I remember in college, there was always like the lacrosse had a house and they were always, you know, having parties and stuff, but they only invited like certain people. It was like a very kind of not exclusive, but again, they're nice people. I had tons of lacrosse friends, but they were just very, it was like its own kind of fraternity almost, is maybe the best way to put it. Their own kind of like circle. So, but in terms of them being, you know, accepting a Faison and not really giving them a hard time, it makes sense because, I mean, look at that athleticism that we were just talking about. And if you're the Notre Dame lacrosse team and your goal is to win a national championship, why would you not want a guy who adds more of a threat to your team overall, right? And so if you're seeing him torch secondaries on Saturdays, I'm sure all those guys are salivating about how he's going to run across the field and be able to, you know, burn through defenses and score goals. And so it's like, to me, if I saw that stuff, I would be like, wow, how can we get this guy? How does this translate to lacrosse? You know what I mean? Because again, it's like, if he's burning college secondaries, I'm pretty sure he can burn through, you know, lacrosse defenses. So,
and he did. Yeah.
It's nice to see that they set the ego down or like, okay, what are we going to do? How is this guy going to make us even more of a threat, essentially, at the end of the day?
And like, if you looked at the roster that lacrosse had, literally, it's like half the roster was 50-year guys. So it would have been really easy for some of those guys to kind of have, you know, to have some attitude with a freshman like Faison who's walking in the door. So, you know, again, just like it just speaks to the kind of culture that they have. And obviously it worked out winning a second national championship. So that's pretty cool. So, a couple things. Good news, DK throwing some cash at Jesse for a pair of yoga pants because Jesse
You're just giving that to Brian.
Is doing the yoga. Thanks for the super chat, DK. But at the same time, he says there are three types of guys who do yoga. Number one, the creeper. Number two, the guy that eats veggie burgers. Number three, the whipped. Jesse isn't vegetarian, so we have two options. Man, coming at you hard on that.
I know. Naomi's been trying to talk me into going for a while now, and my body is notoriously stiff And so you're saying you're
getting whipped into shape is what you're telling me?
You know, there's big stuff coming up. So, again, yoga's nothing but good for the body.
There you go. Try it, DK. You might like it. Buy your own yoga pants.
Diamond. He can do, what is it, Diamond Dallas yoga?
Yeah, Diamond Dallas Page. That's right. Okay, fill in the blank. It's blank that both Riley Leonard and Jordan Faison said that Jaden Mickey would be the Notre Dame player to give himself a 99 rating in the College Football 25 game.
This is, above everything else, not shocking in one bit, because I'll tell you why. Defensive backs talk the most trash, and they think they are the best players on the field at all times. There is not, I'm not kidding you, DBs, there is no position that has a more inflated ego than very defensive true. Backs. You and would guys think it who would are always receiver. Just yapping. But it's always the D, and it goes back to what they were talking about. Riley Leonard was talking about Jaden Mickey chomping at the bit to, you know, these guys asking for more routes, because that's what they do. They just talk crap. All right. They got to do is one thing: try to guard you. They don't have to worry about anything else. Their one job is to run fast and to guard you. So, I mean, to me, it's like the equivalent of going one on one in basketball. It's the same sort of concept. So these DBs, you know, him having this, you know, super inflated, but that's how you want it to be, because these right. DB, you have to believe in yourself if you're going to shut down some yeah. of these stud wide receivers. Like, if you don't believe in yourself, then who's going to stop him? So while I say this, I don't mind it. I want my DBs to be that arrogant, because at least they're going to go out there with the mentality that no one's getting the ball over me, and that's half the battle.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. You know, the short memory and the whole thing, they literally have to have an overinflated ego, like an overinflated sense of self and who they are. Just like they were talking about, you know, howling at Riley Leonard and howling at the wide receivers and Jaden Mickey being that guy, I don't think shocks anybody, because like when you talk about confidence, Jaden Mickey has it, you know? So the fact that he would be the one to give himself the 99 rating, zero surprise in that at all. Yeah. Sloppy Joe says, just look at Richard Sherman. There you go. Because again, like, you would kind of think it would be the wide receivers just because of the diva reputation that the receivers have. But as a defensive back, as a cornerback, you've got to inflate that head with, like, no one's going to beat me. Otherwise, it's going to be a long day.
Yes.
Speaking of College Football 25, fill in the blank. Sam Hartman tweeted a screenshot of himself playing the new College Football 25 game, and it's blank that he was playing it as Wake Forest.
It's spicy that he was playing as Wake Forest.
And I think lighting up Clemson with the Wake Forest offense.
Yeah, and he said, and basically the caption was, you know, I think it was like letting off some steam. And what he was alluding to was his struggles against Clemson as, you know, a Wake Forest quarterback. And obviously we saw the struggles against Clemson when he played, you know, for Notre Dame as well. But the reason why I say this is spicy is because I think it ultimately shows at the end of the day what offense he was most comfortable running. Like, I hate to say it, but
I think so too.
I don't think he knows
the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, with Denbrock's obvious, I think I would assume that Notre Dame's, I haven't played the game yet, but I'm assuming Notre Dame's offense is, you know, resembles around more of what Denbrock does. But to me, again, it kind of shows what he was falling back to or what he was ultimately comfortable with, and maybe why he struggled a little bit with first time offensive coordinator Jared Parker at the helm. So I don't know. To me, it goes back to his comfortability. And ultimately, I think he was just, that's the offense he knows how to run.
Yeah, Gordian, now we're not prosecuting him for, you know, playing it. We're having a little fun with it, just so everyone is clear here. And, you know,
within 30 minutes, someone sent me the picture and said, the best quarterback at Notre Dame over the last 10 years isn't even playing with Notre Dame. And I was like, all right,
well that's one,
a little dramatic. That's
one, he wasn't the best quarterback at Notre Dame over the last 10 years. I would probably rank him third. Like,
well, he was trying to be, you know,
he was having dramatic fun with it as well. I was going to say, yeah, like I think I would put the seasons DeShone Kizer had ahead of Sam Hartman's. But yeah, I mean, he had what was it, like 102 points that he was hanging on Clemson.
It shows how much those guys know about the game, though, right? Because I'm sure they're not just out there. Like, he's not playing on beginner. You know what I mean? He's out there probably on a hard mode just dicing up defenses because he knows how to.
Yeah. And
he knows all the audibles, everything.
Do you know anyone who's actually got it and has played it? Like, do you know anyone personally who's played it yet?
I don't think so. None of my friends have texted me about it yet.
Right. Hartman's lighting it up. And it just goes to show, you know, like, everyone is in this thing, man. It was funny seeing that number, that familiar number 10 for Wake Forest behind center in that game, though. Fill in the blank. It's blank that Riley Leonard says the last song he listens to before a game is Amazing Grace.
To me, it's kind of strange, but, you know, each to their own. I was more of like, I wanted to listen to something that was really going to kind of like pump me up, whether that was maybe like hard rock or like some like hard rap stuff. But like Amazing Grace really feels kind of slower, you know, pulling things out. But again, maybe that's what Riley Leonard needed, was that calmness or that like control of breath or, you know, clear state of mind type of situation. So, you know, for him, right, I can understand
it. Rather than amping up, kind of dial it down a little bit, control the emotions.
Yeah, but again, for him, he plays a position that you don't need to necessarily be amped up. You need to be calm, cool, demeanored, you know, under control. Me, I needed to rev myself up to go run into a running back and tackle him as hard as I could. So it's like, it's just different, different music for different roles, essentially, is what it kind of comes down to me.
He's a very spiritual person, and he kind of talked about his faith and some of that stuff in that interview as well. But Amazing Grace was like the last thing that I expected. I expected some country song, basically, you know, like that's what I thought we were going to get from the Fairhope, Alabama guy. But Amazing Grace, like, it just doesn't, probably the last song you would think of when you think of a football player getting ready to run out on the field and play a game, Amazing Grace. But hey, everyone's got their own, you know, personal thing. Everyone's got their thing that dials them up or dials them down or gets them in the headspace that they need to be. And it's obviously worked out pretty well for him. Like, it was me, I would, you know, probably be, like Kickstart My Heart or something like that. You know, Motley Crue, you know, something along those lines would be more in the wheelhouse. So Riley Leonard's got Amazing Grace. I wonder which version, like if there's a specific version that he has.
I was curious about that too. And I think some other people in the chat were saying, you know, it'd be like this country version of cover of Amazing Grace.
Right. Right. Major League Baseball All-Star Game, of course, is tonight. Do you buy or sell players going back to wearing their regular uniforms during the All-Star Game rather than the matching All-Star uniforms that they've been wearing for the last several years?
Yeah, I do buy that because I think it's authentic and I think it's kind of old school that you get to represent. You know, you're representing your team at the All-Star Game. I get it. You're still a team of All-Stars, but I think it's cool to see, you know, when those guys are out there, they're wearing their, you know, their specific hat, their specific uniform. I just think it gives it kind of a unique layer to the game. And if they're going to do uniforms, just do something that's more, you know, just kind of toned down a little bit more, like, I wouldn't say generic, but you don't need to go with these like bright orange and bright kind of blue uniforms. Like, to me, I'm old school. Give me the uniforms. I get it if you want to do these, you know, team uniforms. But, like, let's stick to some more basic, moderate, you know, colors, essentially. It's not the City Connect uniforms for the All-Star game. Like, let's just tone it down a bit.
Yeah, I completely buy that they should go back to wearing their own uniforms. Because it was just always so cool. Like, when you would see them, for example, like the introductions, you know, at the beginning of the game, they run out there. They've got matching hats, basically, or their hats at least look similar, but they run out in the uniform representing their team. You know, that's that's part of the deal. Like Sloppy Joe is asking if they still do the participation trophy crap where they select at least one player from each team. I don't know if I go participation player, but yes, each team has to be represented in the All-Star game. And that's part fair. Of what's, yeah, that's part of what's cool about it to me. And again, you get to see who's represented by the uniform that they're wearing and seeing them all wear their own uniform. I always thought that that was one of
the things. Yeah, I think it kind of gets lost in the translation of who they're representing. You know, right. I think it's a very, everyone knows in that, and especially if you're the lone player from that team, you know, it's like, this is the only guy wearing this uniform and cap.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, I wish they'd go back to it. Maybe they will in the future. I don't know.
Just more sales.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know what it is. They're all trying to sell merchandise. It's not enough that they sell the caps. They got to try to sell the jerseys as well. So.
Same reason why your boy Skeens is starting.
Paul Skeens on the mound tonight. Aaron Judge is batting cleanup. I've seen this debate kick up.
If it goes 1-2-3, are they going to let him go to Judge?
Right. Like, if you're Paul Skeens, would you rather strike out the side, or like, do you want at least a runner to get on to have the opportunity to face Aaron Judge, considering he is only going to pitch one inning?
Well, here's my argument. This whole thing is, you know, we want Skeens.
So you think this is going to be set up so that we see Skeens versus Judge? Is that what you're leading?
If it goes 1-2-3, there's no doubt Skeens is going running back out there against Judge.
You think so? Even though they've said he's only going to pitch one inning.
There's no doubt. Again, if they're setting this thing up for what they want it to be, you know, the marketing of the best players and the most hot, you know, relatable players, popular players right now. I mean, we're talking about a guy who's in contention for triple crown. And leading, you know, a lot of offensive categories and just has done nothing but, you know, hit bombs over the last 2-3 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the young, great, you know, pitcher that throws over 100 and has all these strikeouts. It's like, that's best on best, in my opinion, you know, best pitcher, absolutely, best hitter. So if that's what this whole thing is supposed to be about, then I think you have to run him out there and give the fans what they want.
Yeah. You know, Anthony's saying that, he is pitching only one inning again. Yeah, I don't think that he'll come out for a second inning if he doesn't face Judge, to answer your question. I would be curious, though, to see, like, you know, would you intentionally walk the number three batter just to have a little fun, put a runner on base and let him face Aaron Judge? Like, if there's two outs and nobody on. You know, the other part of it, like, everyone's acting like Skeens is just going to mow through these guys. Who's to say there won't be, you know, somebody gets on?
Listen, all these guys can hit 100 miles per hour at this point, right, especially when we're talking about the three best hitters in the American League. Like, velocity is going to be no issue for these guys. It's just a matter of can they pick up on his off speed that's, you know, looking like his fastball, and then it's going to split off. That the velo is not going to be an issue, especially if these guys, if Aaron Judge just touches the ball, that thing is going to fly.
Yeah, like Anthony brings up, and I was thinking about this as well. I don't know why Bruce Bochy didn't just bat Aaron Judge third. Judge bats third for the Yankees. Why didn't he just bat him third? Obviously, he doesn't care about the Skeens matchup, but I don't know. I think that Major League Baseball would have strongly encouraged it if they had had any input in all of this. You know, even though Jesse thinks that they've had a lot of input anyway, and making sure that Skeens is out there for the first inning.
That 1-2-3 though is going to be like, I wish Skeens would have to go through the first six batters. I would want him to see him go against Kwan, Gunnar Henderson, Juan Soto, Aaron Judge, Yordan Alvarez, and Jose Ramirez. I think that is a brutal six batter stretch right there. But again, it's like, why not just swap Soto and Judge, you know, at 3 and 4? There's no reason to not have Judge at 3. But I mean, those are still like Kwan, best batting average in the AL, a guy who literally was batting like almost 500 at one point. Gunnar Henderson, young shortstop coming off the home run derby last night, the most home runs ever by a shortstop coming into the All-Star break. You know, Juan Soto and Aaron Judge, the two best, you know, players for the Yankees, and just overall on-base percentage slug guys. It's like, I don't know, I'm very excited to tune in and see those kind of first time, you know, through the lineups until guys start getting subbed out. Like, those are going to be some really good matchups.
By the way, Promonte Brothers in Pittsburgh is giving everyone who shows up to their restaurant during the All-Star game a free sandwich in honor of Paul Skeens. So it's too bad you don't live closer to Pittsburgh. You could show up at Promonte Brothers tonight, get a free sandwich during the All-Star game.
I have to ask you, did you see Paul Skeens' red carpet outfit?
Was that the white suit?
The white suit.
I did see that.
Just going to say it. I don't think white men should be wearing white suits.
White men should not wear the all white
unless suit. It's like Brad Pitt or like Matt Damon. There's very few men who can pull off the all white suit.
I feel like Gosling yeah, could pull it off.
You just gotta, and this is nothing against Skeens. It's just like, it's, you're already, you know, like, you're just kind of washing yourself out essentially at the end of the day. I just think there's much better color to sit. But what do I know? I'm not dating, you know, Livy Doon and all that stuff. So he's obviously,
yeah,
you know, got things working the right. I think she probably told him to wear that too at the end of the day.
She probably did. Speaking of Home Run Derby, had you ever heard of Ingrid Andress before last night?
So I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not a big, like, you tell me a name, I'm probably not going to know the face. But when I started to kind of look into some of her popular songs, I was like, okay, I've heard those before.
You recognize the songs anyway?
Yeah, I recognize the song. I would not know her face to her name by any means. But another thing kind of, you know, that makes her popular, she also writes a lot of songs for other people. So I know I've heard of some of the songs that she's written for other people as well. So I've only heard her because of music. I didn't know that was the face and name.
There are a lot of actual names that I know, but I don't necessarily know what they sing, you know, that kind of stuff. I had never heard of Ingrid Andress before last night, and Michael Parks is saying, who? Well, Michael, if you
Google that one,
if you haven't seen, there was just an awful rendition of the national anthem before the Home Run Derby last night, and Ingrid Andress sang it. And I was actually, Jesse and I were on the phone while this is going on, and I'm like, who is singing this? This is the worst thing that I've ever heard. And then it blows up, of course, on social media. Well, she put out something today in response to her less than stellar performance last night. She said, I'm not going to BS y'all. I was drunk last night. She said this on Instagram today. She said she's checking herself into a facility today to get help. She said, that was not me last night. I apologize to MLB, all the fans in this country I love so much, for that rendition. So Ingrid Andress, very bad performance last night.
But Alex, at least it Holm, makes sense now, right?
Give her the side eye. Like, do you buy this whole thing? Like, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is a Grammy nominated. Like, if you go through,
4-time Grammy nominated artist.
That's what I mean.
One of, like, the all-time worst national anthem renditions.
There's no way you sound like that. I'm sorry. And especially, like, in country music, there's less auto-tune. It's more about, I feel like, your vocals. So, like, I think the bigger question is, one, should there always be a backup on hand for situations like this? And two, who let this girl, you know, get white girl wasted? There was no manager that... Because she's like, you know, she's skinny, she's tall, and it's like, I feel like 3 cocktails is enough to do someone like herself.
She was
in.
Probably nervous, like, knowing that she was going to be in front of all those people. So she, you know, was trying to, like, calm her nerves and maybe went too far with it. You know, like, if I'm being generous with, you know, maybe the situation that led to all this.
But don't you think you should always have, like, an emergency trumpeter ready to go, or just, like.
Probably should.
You know what I mean? Just, like.
Yeah.
Because it's probably just a bad look on the MLB's part.
But I mean, what are you going to do? Are you gonna like quiz everyone who's singing the anthem?
Hey, give us your rendition, and then we'll
yeah, decide. Like you're going to do a breathalyzer, you know, before they go out there, or yeah, like give us your mock rendition so we can hear what it's going
to
sound like.
That's what I mean. They had to do a trial run at some point, and she was, you know, sober and good. So it's like that had to be. They had to do a practice run.
Yeah, because typically before a lot of these different events, you will hear whoever's doing the anthem like 2 to 3 hours before they're actually supposed to go out there. They'll do a test drive of.
Listen, I have no hate for this. It's a little funny, and to me, I sent it to my friends, and I'm like, this is just basically one of the boys at the karaoke bar, you know, on a Saturday night trying to sing. Like that's I felt more common because of what she did. You know what I mean? Like. Showed us but that there's
she like when you go back and look at it though, like she did look like she was in kind of rough shape, you know, like when you look at just her overall state when she was out there, you know, because again, it's who is this person again?
Why is she so bad?
Yeah, so all right, well,
also, I need to not let this slip under the cracks. This is just rude, uncalled for. I don't know if it's just because Anthony's a Pirates fan and I've been bagging on Skeens.
Coming at you hard. Jesse needs cardio, not Promonte brothers. Man.
Man. That's why I'm going to yoga tonight.
Isn't Promonte's the one that puts the fries on the sandwich?
Is that right? I believe so.
I think it is. I'm pretty sure it is. Are you Googling this?
Yep. Yes, it is.
Okay. That's what I thought. Yeah. All right. I mean, you know, fries on a sandwich, it's like, it's great in concept. I'm surprised that it's lasted as long as it has. You know, it's like,
I was never, first time. We ever, you know, there. I had friends that did this, like, you know, like the kids would whip out like their, you know, ham and turkey and cheese sandwich for lunch. And then they put like the Doritos or the Lay's in it.
Uh-huh.
I never really got on board because it's like, why? One, it's just like, it doesn't really add anything. And two, it's like now I'm combining it into one. I don't get to enjoy my sandwiches and chips separately.
Have it over here on the side. That's right.
Yeah. Now it's like I'm just combining it and making it, you know, less essentially. So I don't know. I never got into that. I didn't think it was the craziest thing, but I just knew like a lot of my friends would always be putting like Doritos on their sandwiches. I'm like, what are you doing?
Interesting. Never tried that. I don't think I've ever done the chips on a sandwich. I have, there's actually a place right down the street from Wrigley Field. I can't remember if you went with us. they do the fries on the sandwich though. If you've ever had, like, try it there.
I don't think I have.
Man, Anthony is coming even harder. He's like, said he saw a picture from your college days when you were jacked. Not so much anymore. There's 15 months to get ready for the nuptials.
There's just no longer a time and place, you know, like I don't need to be, you know, jacked and running all the time and, you know, but there's a balance. I was telling you yesterday on the phone, there's a big difference between like just going to class, walking around to class, being on campus, just an 8-hour job where you sit at a computer all day. You kind of take advantage of those extra steps that you used to get in and not even think about, just like the stuff outside of practicing, working out, you know, all that stuff, games,
yep,
just the extra happens. Steps.
Like you get used to what, you know, your typical intake is. And then you get a little bit older when all that activity starts falling off and it's very easy for it to slide pretty quick. All right. Well, that's going to do it for today. Appreciate you being here. Appreciate Leah Two King for being here earlier today. As well, we will be back tomorrow and for the rest of the week, of course, as well. Until then, we will talk to you then on IB Nation Sports Talk.